Well, good afternoon. I'm Marty Highfield, one of the co-presenters, and this is Dr. Chia Kwanye, my co-presenter. And we hope to give you a little bit of comparison between the U.S. missionary perspective in the mid-60s and the Nigerian perspective on the same set of nurses when the Nigerian Christian Hospital started. So I will warn you that intentionally Chi and I minimized our communication so that we could keep our perspectives a little more true to what we saw ourselves. So we don't know exactly how this is going to come out. So welcome to the adventure. Do I have to do this? I'll get it here. Why is this not?
No, you shouldn't have.
It's not advancing. As I said, welcome to the adventure. Now, why would it not advance? Is it because of the...
Keep talking.
All right. So, my connection to Nigeria began in 1964 when my family moved there. My father was a surgeon to begin the Nigerian Christian Hospital. So, in 1965 to 1967, before the Biafran War, we had the missionary physician, Henry Farrer, my father, and two missionary nurses from the U.S. come and do a remarkable thing within just 2 years. In this story, I would say that a couple of observations. One is that ordinary people can do very extraordinary things. And the second thing is that their faith compelled them to do this, but it also freed them to do this. And I'll explain that a little bit. So let me just give, how did the missionaries get there in the first place? In the 1940s, there was an evangelist, a Nigerian evangelist, C.A.O. Essien, who began a Nigerian-initiated restoration movement. It's quite a remarkable story. And when he learned, he didn't know there were any other churches who were trying to restore New Testament Christianity. When he learned of the Lawrence Avenue Church in Nashville, Tennessee, he began to write them many, many letters begging for missionaries to come and to teach the Nigerians. He said, "We can teach our own people. We want you to come and teach us." And he had founded already 80 churches, 80-something churches, started a preacher training school. So, in fact, there's quite an interesting history behind all that. By 1952, the missionaries came. Permanent U.S. missionaries moved there. And the missionary women, thank you. There's my a little preview of my own history. Some of you. I was number 2 of 6 children. There were 5 at the time. Whoops. Let's go the right way. Oh, I was going to talk about where Nigeria is in a minute. But in 1952, the missionary women discovered that they had quite a job treating people at the back door, transporting the very ill to distant hospitals. Most of those women were not nurses. 2 of them were. Most were not. And then when the Reese Bryant and Patty Bryant family arrived in 1958, a tipping point sort of got reached. And they said, we just can't do this anymore. Reese said later, "Christ's example of healing compelled us. We could not ignore the great suffering all around us." So they raised money and recruited physician and nurse. Now, for those of you, I always like to say where Nigeria is because everybody doesn't always remember. So you can see on the map of Africa, it's right in the rainforest area, sub-Saharan. This gives you an idea of its size, small landmass, lots of people. And most of those people live in the southeast where we went. There's Nigeria on the map. The hospital was right around this area. Now, people are always asking about the current Boko Haram problems and all that. Most of that's occurring up here. Okay, so that's some distance. And if you take time to zoom in on Google Maps. You can actually, it'll take you into an earth view, and you can actually see the aerial view of the map of the hospital and a picture or two. There's some gentleman that's posted his picture. I don't know who he is. It's interesting. So that's where Nigeria is. That's where we were located. And mile 11, there's Abba. There's a Kotick Penny. And the hospital was at mile 11. That was the address. So now, imagine for a moment that it's 1965. You are a white 23-year-old female single U.S. nurse. You believe that a Christian hospital is needed to meet the physical and spiritual needs of the people in Nigeria, in this area. You go out and raise your own salary with the help of preachers and other men because you can't speak in front of congregations. A lot of it comes in $5, $1 increments. Your work is to help two other novice missionaries start a hospital. Ever think about starting a hospital? You've never been on an airplane. You arrive in sub-Saharan Africa for a two-year stint after 4 years of nursing school and basic preparation, and you meet your nurse colleague for the first time at the airport there in Port Harcourt. And when you get there, you've come to start and work in a hospital. There is no hospital. There's no government approval for a hospital. There's no land donated for a hospital, although there are some promises. So this is what Nancy Petty and Iris Hayes came into when they arrived there. They each described themselves as being called. Iris said she was called to be a missionary, but she was never going to be a nurse and never a teacher. So that's she had to reverse all that before the story was over. And Nancy was always going to be a nurse, but she was never going to be a missionary. The second thing is they were very different from each other, even in physical appearance, but in just about every way you can imagine. They were alike in their faith. Everything else was different. Nancy was an outspoken, take-charge kind of person. Iris was quiet and reserved. Nancy was from the country. Iris was from the city. Nancy came from a very high-functioning family of origin. Iris came from a dysfunctional family. These are the women who met on the mission field and formed a lifetime friendship, actually, that ended in 2012 with Iris' death, to be continued in heaven. Okay, and they were warmly welcomed by the Nigerians, but not everyone greeted them warmly. So within days, they started going to this other hospital at Umahia, Queen Elizabeth Hospital, to learn how nursing, medicine were practiced over there. So they got there, and this legendary matron who had been there since colonial days was still there from the UK, told them they might as well go home. They were not qualified. As Nancy recalled later, Matron Ann Bent told us there was no way we could help to build a hospital. There was no way we could train nurses, that we were not qualified whatsoever. You can't do it, she said. And we were really quiet on the drive back to our house. Iris said, well, here we are. And Iris said, you know, she's right. And then she said, well, there is nobody else here to do it. There is nobody else here. It's us. So we can do what we can do. We can do what we can do, and the Lord will have to do the rest. So in this watershed moment, Nancy and Iris realized they were not going to be Ann Bent. But they could be Nancy and Iris. So that's what they started to do. So their faith compelled them to come, but it also freed them to work. After that watershed moment, they took on many roles. When I first started looking at the history of what they did, I thought, oh, they went over here and did this, they went over here and did that. But when you look at what they were actually doing in a bigger picture way, it's really pretty amazing. They were goodwill ambassadors, first of all. They were still trying to get the land from 19 different villages. Okay? So the team decided it would be nice for them to go out and teach women's health classes in these villages and establish relationships. So here's what Nancy says she remembered. So there was Iris, there was me, the short, wide one, and Iris, the tall, thin one. We'd drive our little car up, and we'd get out, and usually the chief of the village would be there to greet us. What was going on in their heads is, we're going to start a hospital, and we're going to have employees, and we're going to be training them. They gave us gifts of pineapples, bananas, chickens, goats, plantains, and eggs that they needed. We had two interpreters, Comfort and Rhoda, that went with us, who listened and learned so much that they were invaluable during the later Biafran War when the Red Cross ended up occupying the hospital. Within months, within months, they actually became also sort of a human resources department. They screened 435 local people for what they hoped to be about 20, what we might call nursing assistants, or they were a little higher than our nursing assistants, more like LVNs, that they wanted to teach. So they wrote the screening exams, they interviewed, and they selected, I can't remember if it was 14 or 17 right now, I was trying to remember. Ultimately, they taught two classes and graduated, I think, 17. I think the first class was 14. Okay, one other element of the goodwill ambassador role was, you imagine you're a landowner, okay, and your kid doesn't get selected, and you're counting on, you know, this thing. You're not going to be very happy about this. So there was a lot of unhappiness, and Dr. Fair got a lot of unhappy people at his door. So he decided that they would start a first aid class, which aggravated Nancy no end. There were no enrollment limits. There was no English proficiency. There was no testing. Okay, just we're going to take all comers. And some of these children of the landowners, these are grown people. These are not, you know, children. Okay. Decades later, Nancy told this story, her evolving perspective, I'll call it. I said, Dr. Fair, of all the things you've asked us to do, this is the craziest. Well, the students got certificates when they finished. You know, they taught them basically first aid, a little bit about CPR as we knew it then, and those kinds of things. Then she said, do you know how many of them, after the Biafra War, 1967-70, still had their certificate? Now, you think in a war zone, you value that certificate if you still got that certificate. They said, this saved my life, because when I presented this, I became a medic. Over 50 people came to tell me that. You saved my life. And Nancy's conclusion was, see, when God is working, you may not appreciate it. Okay, as they prepared to open the hospital, Iris took on the role of director of education. Nancy took on the role of matron, which means do everything operational. Iris designed, taught basically a 12-month equivalent of our LVN kind of education, and had two classes, and a lot of the missionaries have always said those were some of the best nurses they had at the hospital were those that Iris trained. Iris also worked as a secretary. She bought a 3-inch high typewriter. Can you imagine? Typed out all her little exams. These are the mimeograph. You know, one carbon copy at a time, she said. They were also hospital designers and the purchasing department for the, what Iris lovingly called the Nigerian Cracker Box Clinic, because it was a teeny little building that used to be a colonial offices, a British district officer rest house, we can call it. And they had permission to redo this. Iris drafted plans, floor plans. They bargained for, bought, sewed the exam room curtains. They had the tables built. They painted the shelves and stocked them. They sorted donations. They did all of that. They also supported evangelism directly in a couple of ways, typing lessons for the missionary evangelists and teaching women and children's Bible classes were a couple of those things. And one of the big things was treating the both the Nigerian and the missionary evangelists who were sick, which preserved their ability to even sometimes stay on the field when they otherwise would have had to go home. Okay, on August 23, we're coming up on 50 years here. On August 23, 1965, the Nigerian Christian Cracker Box Clinic opened, and there are lots of wonderful stories, and I knew Nancy was the rule enforcer. When I thought about it, she actually was sort of a cultural revolutionary, because she said, here's a big chief comes in, he's got some little problem, and here's a baby dying of measles. Well, you know, sorry, big chief, we're not going to see you. Well, that is a complete reversal of what they anticipated. She also, one of the stories that's kind of gone down in legend is a man showed up and he said, I was a mercenary in the Congo and I killed people. And, you know, he was called her out and expected to be at the front of the line. And the story is she drew up herself up to her 5'2" or 5'3" height, whatever she was, and said, and I am Nancy Petty from Bear Creek, Tennessee, and you are going to have to wait in line like everyone else. So, actually, he laughed, and all the other patients thought that was hilarious, apparently. She also ordered Dr. Ferrer to bed. He was going to determine. He got hepatitis right after the clinic opened. She said, we sent all the patients home. We went up there. We sent all the patients home. Said, we don't know if the doctor's going to live. And then we went down and told Dr. Ferrer, you're not going up there. And he didn't. There are other stories of advocacy that I'll skip. I wish I could tell them all. From August 1965 to August 66, that year in there, Nancy and Iris worked in the clinic 3 days a week. Iris taught the nursing students. Nancy worked on preparing the hospital. And they said they did everything that needed to be done that there was nobody else to do. That's what they did. So then, a year to the day, interestingly, August 23, 1966, that the clinic opened, the hospital opened. And it's still open today. So, Matron Nancy oversaw everything, and I just have a few pictures. This is a little bit further along than that opening. What opened initially was the women and children's labor and delivery, which is now a men's ward. There's a copy of the original invitation. A couple of pictures from the opening. They had the chief medical officer from Aba nearby came down and had all the wonderful speeches and ribbon cutting. It was raining. That's why they were under the roof there. His first inpatient was the wife of the laundryman. Had a baby. And that was Cornelius, one of the early patients. Okay. So, let me go back to that just a minute. So Nancy said, Nancy oversaw everything. I don't know how she did all this. She tracked linen, disciplined staff with what they called her beady eye look. They made jokes about that. Assisted in surgery, hired nurses, transported bodies to the morgue. As Nancy said, I just did what I was supposed to do every day to make that hospital go. I could do the payroll for the nurses. I set up the operating schedule. I trained the nurses assisting in OR. I sterilized our equipment. I made rounds. I checked the toilets. I parceled out the food they were going to cook. I ordered the drugs. I did everything. Okay, so whatever there was. Everything actually included beating a bodyguard as well, because when there was some local tribal violence, some people were murdered even. The hospital's near a river. It's a tribal border. And the hospital workers would go down and turn on the hospital pump for water in the morning, only if Nancy Petty would go with them. She said she didn't know what she was to do if anybody started shooting, but anyway. Nancy also took on the role of foster parent. They had a tragic situation where a little baby died. The daddy just couldn't take care of it. She said, if that ever happens again, I'm going to take this on. Well, the mom died, and they buried the mom, left the grave open, partly filled, to put the baby in. Well, 3 days later, the baby was still alive. So they brought the baby to Nancy, and she named her Virginia and foster mothered her while she was there. They really established friendships with the staff. They had game nights and parties. They had people over at their house, little bitty, teeny little house all the time. And she called Mark, who worked with them, a very close brother to me and Iris. He really took care of them. Additionally, they kept all their family roles at home active through letters, sister, daughter, aunt. So those stayed. They were role models for the missionary children. Now, I wouldn't have thought about this, but Grace Fair, my mom, said the children looked up to them. They had fun with the kids. The kids loved it, and it was wonderful for the families. They were also conscious that they were role models for future missionary nurses. They said, "We felt it was really important for us to seek God's will and to do the right thing, that we would be the examples for those that came after. We were really certain for sure we were going to stay our 2 years, because we felt like if we didn't stick it out, and if we didn't do the right things every day, and if we didn't make it over 6 months, got home sick, or whatever, it would be terrible for those that came after us." In conclusion, Nancy said, "I don't think it could be said any better than the sign that was everywhere, all over the place. We dress the wound, God heals it." Here's what she said, too. "Remember, you don't have control over very much. Not very much. And you'll be more peaceful. You'll be released from thinking, if I don't do this and this and this, God can't work. Well, yeah, he wants you, but he will work it out." So again, I found that their faith both compelled them and freed them, these ordinary women, to do quite remarkable work. 2 years after they came, they left the day before the airport closed with the Biafra War on the horizon. That was a planned leaving. Nancy came back years later. In the meantime, they went to Cameroon and set up a mobile clinic. They were hoping to drive back across the border when the war ended. So those are all stories still yet to be told. So that sort of gives you a quick summary of my part, and now I want to turn the floor over to Chi.
Did you need to switch that PowerPoint? Let's
see. That's the point of this.
Is it?
No. This. Did you think it's this one or that? Is it? Yeah.
Okay. Well, hello.
Hello.
This is one of those moments in life. First, you never dreamed of it. Secondly, you can't believe it's happening. But then it is. This would remain one of the happiest days of my life, no matter how long I lived. For my sister, Murdy, today could be just any other day. She's done something that she probably does every day. But for me, it's different. We're talking about something that happened 50 years ago, this August. 50 years ago, if you can follow me, I would have been a native child, a primitive child, a local child, probably a pagan child. Actually, Marty and I make the joke about we knew each other before we knew each other.
Yeah.
I don't know how you understand that, but that's really how I think of it. I knew her before I knew her. We grew up within like 7 miles of each other, but on the other side. I was on the other side, she was on the other side. But we think our paths did cross 50 years ago. Really, it did. But we still wouldn't know it until recently. So, a couple of years ago, Marty told me she was getting ready to tell the story of these two American nurses. According to what she said, I understood the story was really a long story. And we haven't even started telling this story because the story continues. But in a way, she said, well, you know, I don't think I can tell the story all by myself. I'm going to need your help. And what I want you to do is help me tell the other side of the story. So actually, it's her story because she was a part of it in a sense. I was also a part of it in another sense. Lately, I ran into one of the missionaries that I didn't run into her. We were at a dinner together. She mentioned her, Reason Patty Bryant. But before then, I had read Patty's book that she called Divine Choreography, which is her story of her days in Nigeria. And one of the things she said in her book was that her husband, Rhys Bryant, will preach like in four churches every Sunday. And when I read that, I thought, no wonder. No wonder we sat in church all day long, waiting. Waiting for the missionary. As a child, I always wondered, why would we be in church from 7 o'clock to like 4 o'clock? And the preacher never got there. Now it made sense. He probably would have gone to 2, 3, 4, 5 other churches before getting to us. However, we're talking about 50 years ago. Nancy and Iris Hayes flew into Nigeria and they went into the premises of what was then called the BTC. This was the Bible Training College at Onitsha. 50 years ago. That would be before the Nigerian Christian Hospital, which came on in 1965. What I thought was interesting from speaking to the Nigerian nurses was basically their frame of mind as they went to join the missionaries in the training. And this is best captured in the words of Chinua Achebe, who is a foremost African novelist. You can hear what that man wrote. This novel was published in 1958. And Chinua talks about how the white man is very clever. He came quietly and peaceably with his religion. We were amused at his foolishness and allowed him to stay. And now, what has he done? He put a knife on the things that held us together and we fell apart. And the title of this novel is called Things Fall Apart. If you really want to know about Nigeria before Nigerian Christian Hospital, I would suggest you read Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. So that is the Nigeria that Nancy and Iris Hayes flew into in 1965. They came into a country that had been under colonial rule. We're just getting out of British rule. So basically, they came into a society, into a culture where they were feared, people were suspicious, people were skeptical. Actually, they were hated, but they were needed. In the 1950s and 60s, well, today, maybe my brother Oke, who is here, myself and a few other Africans understand that not every white man is English. But back then, not everybody would know that. Today, I know there are American white people, there are British white people, there are Canadian white people, and there are Australian white people. But back then, you were white man and you were white man. I don't remember what happened to the women, but basically, you were white and you were white. And so here comes this white man's invitation. So Nancy and Iris go basically to the villages. I'm not exactly sure how they did it. And they say, we need your daughters and probably your sons to come and be trained as nurses. Now, I want you to imagine that. And so they're looking at them like, what are you up to? Is it one of your tricks? Are you trying to trick us? What is going to happen to us? And of course, this feeling, the skepticism, is either intensified or minimized depending on whether you are Church of Christ or not. If you are Church of Christ, that means you already probably know about the BTC and you know about Nancy and Iris. And so somehow you're better prepared because you already know what they're doing. But if you're not Church of Christ, you don't only have the problem that you're going to go on the other side and work with them, you also have the problem of your people looking at you like, but that's not your church. So why are you going there? You're basically abandoning your church for another church because, let's see, who said this? Okay. This is what Sister Rose said. She said, everybody said I was going to them because of what they will give to me and that I was leaving our church. It wasn't easy for this young girl, for the Church of Christ people, and which I don't remember there were many of them, probably just maybe one or two. Sister Rose, if you remember, was Kwa Ibu Church. And Kwa Ibu Church would be Nigerian equivalent of, I think, the Presbyterian Church or something, some other church like that. So if you're not Church of Christ, people are thinking, oh, you're going to them because of what they're going to give you. And what do you think the Church of Christ people are thinking? The Church of Christ people are thinking, aha, you're not a church person, but you're coming, I guess, to benefit from us. And so these young ladies are caught in between this. But this was Sister Eunice, who unfortunately passed away. Was it last year or this year? I think sometime late last year, Sister Eunice died. So she says she was a Seventh-day Adventist. And incidentally, she remained Seventh-day Adventist after all the years of working at the Nigerian Christian hospitals. And of course, Nancy and Iris and Dr. Farah and all the Christians that were at the Christian hospital. When I was talking to Rose and Eunice at this point, it made me think of, I guess it's Ecclesiastes 1, probably 11. Nothing is new under the sun. Today, at Susanna Homes, that is the ministry that I am affiliated with in Nigeria, my niece started calling our American missionaries my cousins. I'm not sure how she arrived at that, but she calls them my cousins, and so everybody calls them my cousins. Not your sisters are here, not your brothers are here. They basically say, Mama, your cousins are here. And here's what Rose said, maybe before I say what I want to say. That's a direct quote from Rose concerning Nancy. So here we are in 1965, the young nurses arrive in Nigeria. They go into the villages, they want to recruit these young girls to work with them at the Christian hospital. But these girls are coming out of this background, oh, you're going over on the other side. And so they go to work with Nancy and Iris with a lot of skepticism. They are a little bit afraid. They don't know what these people are up to, but here they are. And what happens? The first time I was confronted with this, a relative shows up, and we had a group from Atlanta that were at Susanna Homes and doing some work. And this relative comes up to me, and let's have this conversation. And she goes, your cousins are different. Mm-hmm. And what do you mean they're different? And she goes, they are poor. And I go, what makes you think they are poor? And she says, they work. They are different, very different. Well, if you were not under the British rule, if you were not colonized by the British, it's difficult to understand what they meant. We have grown up with people we know as the masters who are chauffeur driven. They have the cooks, they have the steward. All you do is hew and fetch. But here comes Nancy Pady and Iris Hayes and all the missionaries that were at the BTC. What do they do? Several years ago here at Pepperdine, they did a thing on the upside down kingdom. I believe it was called. That the kingdom of God is upside down. It's turned around, it's the other way. And lately, and I think as early as this morning, was it this morning that Don McLaughlin spoke? Don said something about the new century Christian being something that we have never seen anything like this. And that couldn't have been more apt in describing what happened in 1965 through to 1967 in Nigeria at BTC with the nurses from the U.S. and the Nigerian nurses. It was one of those moments like, we have never seen anything like this. These two young women reversed what these young girls knew about white people. According to Rose, Nancy and Iris were like their sisters. They came out to play with them. They did things with them. When they had needs, they went to them. It's almost like what the people there knew were not different. And so with me 50 years later, running a program where I can say Nancy and Iris still come to Susanna Homes 2-3 times a year. And think about that. This is what Rose said about an event that happened 50 years ago. And today, later, 50 years later, somebody walks up to me and says almost the same thing. Your cousins are different. So here's the gist. Two very different worlds came together. These young women, the two from the United States and the 14, probably 17, from Nigeria, came with unimagined faith, courage, and trust. I guess that everything will be fine. Even if they came with tricks, with God in it, the tricks turned to blessings. The two worlds built a hospital. The motto or the slogan at the Nigerian Christian Hospital is that by his stripes we are healed. I think that's what is inscribed on a lot of things, and actually probably on their letterhead. It's by their stripes, by his stripes we are healed. The hospital thrived and became the hub and beacon from which many took Christ to the world. Oftentimes, like many here who've worked in Africa or in third world countries, oftentimes, health, education, social services, housing, and things like this go together with the gospel. Today we always wonder if the Nigerian Christian Hospital had not been built where it was built, we wonder how long the Bible College would have lasted. Because actually, it's almost like the hospital has outlasted the Bible College. So if the Bible College had not come at the time it came, there's no telling how well the Bible College would have done. The hospital survived the war, of all things. Marty said something about people coming with their certificates to say, this saved my life. And it is so true. During the Nigerian Civil War, anything you had that showed you had some training in healthcare was invaluable. the Red Cross and everybody that needed your services hired them, probably paid them a lot of money that truly helped them survive the war. So the hospital survived the war. It also survived the peace. We were the conquered people. The Biafran people were conquered. We were defeated by the federal troops. And so I can't begin to tell you what that meant. It meant several years of rebuilding, of crawling, of just going from the bottom and trying to come up again. And the story continues. The presence of the Nigerian Christian Hospital in southeastern Nigeria, where we are, strengthened the Bible College, and it strengthened the churches of Christ that were all around there, and even helped to plant some more. Because I remember that even after the war, Dr. Whitaker and the others, wherever they went to preach, they went with their medical group. And as they gave medications to the people, they preached the gospel, they handed out tracts, and more churches were planted. I do believe strongly from the bottom of my heart that my brother is here, that myself, my brother, all of us in my family are probably what we are and who we are today. It's difficult to say, but somehow a part of me knows that we're probably who we are, stand where we do stand today because of the Nigerian Christian Hospital and the BTC that came so very close to us. It's still there. Even as I speak, if any of the children at the orphanage is sick, we go to the Nigerian Christian Hospital. If somebody in the village where we live is sick, we send them to the Nigerian Christian Hospital. And the good thing is, they have kept the faith. When we go, all of our children are treated for free. We never have to pay. They have kept the faith and the vision and the good intentions of the pioneers who had that hospital started really 50 years ago. I do want to hope and believe that both of our two worlds, the Nigerian world and the American world that came together 50 years ago to start the Nigerian Christian Hospital, I do want to believe that we also would be able to stand together August 23 in some way and acknowledge the great efforts to celebrate the courage, the faith of those two young women, the doctor who brought them, and all the doctors and missionary families that were at Onitsha-Ngwa from 1958 and all till today. Nobody lives there permanently now, but I know we do have short-term missionaries that keep coming and going, and the doctors still go and come. And so, like you rightly said, the faith and courage that enabled those two young women to travel to Nigeria 50 years ago is still there. It's been through a lot of ups and downs and obstacles, but the truth is it has remained. And I do hope and believe that it would continue. And this story, hopefully, we will tell again. Maybe not here, but somewhere where we'll never have to stop and where the time will never end. And we'll continue to tell the story. Glad you were here this afternoon to listen. I'm honored to have done this, to have been able to share the stories of these young women from the 60s. And I say so. Thank you, and God bless all of us.
I would just say thank you, Keith. In closing, to anybody who's interested in any additional information, this is there's a reprint of this book available, which is not about the hospital per se, but has Nigerian mission history from contact or CAOSN up through 1964, and it's more about the Bible training program. And then you mentioned Patty Bryant's book is another good one that you can get, and a book by Grace Ferrer, who is the wife of Henry Ferrer, the surgeon, my mom. So those are actually three good resources. I'm putting together a book on the nursing mission history, but there's a lot. I do want to say, you know, the hospital is functioning now with Nigerian physicians and nurses. So while we don't have a resident person there, and it's even more remarkable because it's on the final battleground that Biafra final war was fought on that land. So the fact that the walls even are standing is pretty remarkable. So the Lord has had a hand in this. Nobody doubts it from the get-go. I think it's time for us to end, but Chi and I, I'm sure, would be happy to answer any questions, either as a group or if you need to go, or just personally. So, again, my thanks. I add to Chi's for coming.